This is Trumpet Vibes, a low-key podcast where we explore and discuss all things related to the trumpet and how we, as trumpet players, navigate an ever-changing world within the music industry, all while keeping it chill, of course. I'm your host, Ellis Williams, entertainer, songwriter, businessman, with over 20 years on a horn and on the stage. Welcome back to part 3 of my interview with the amazing Larry Hart. First episode, we talked about what to expect when picking your first mouthpiece. In part 2, we discussed the expectations of owning your own horn, and today, we're discussing the topic of getting a custom horn made. There are so many brands out there, and their process of making that $5,000 trumpet can vary. Larry and I will discuss what to expect when getting a horn made, and we'll throw in some stories about our own experiences along the way. Let's get it! Let's talk about my favorite topic, getting a custom made horn. Oh okay. Boy. So how do you feel about custom made horns? Are they even necessary?
Yeah, I think they have a very valid place. I think the science and the detail of sound in today's world, I think it really can warrant that, you know. Mm-hmm. Although, you know, there's that argument of it doesn't matter what you play on, you sound like you. But I think the concept of a custom made horn is that this custom made horn is going to make you sound better, and I don't think that's the correct.
Yeah.
Thought process. I think the custom made horn gives you the sensations when you play to make you comfortable when you play, like we talked about earlier in mouthpieces. You know, mm-hmm. You want to be comfortable on a horn. You want to play it. You want to have confidence that when you put your ear through the horn, you're going to get out of it what you want, and you're going to get the feedback on your lips that you want. And I think the custom horns can help achieve that desired feel. I don't necessarily agree with changing your sound unless you don't have a concept of sound. If you don't have a concept of what sound you're going to play with, then I think that I guess in that respect, the horn would determine your sound, because you're just going to play, you're going to play the horn as what it is, and whatever comes out the other end, you're going to get. So if you played, you know, horn A and it's all custom, and then horn B and then horn C, which is not custom and has, you know, issues and things like that, that will affect you. Now, the player that knows what they want in the sound can say, well, I get the same sound from horn C, but it's harder to feel it than it is on horn A. I'm getting more feedback from the horn on the custom horn and less on the completely non-custom horn. And I think that there's all that obviously in between, but I think that the science has come into play so much that I think that there's a lot more to be had on a really good custom horn. True. But you run into the same problem as you do with a mouthpiece. How do you explain to somebody, and that's where these horn guys, the horn makers, you know, can be really good at, and how do you interpret what somebody wants? You know, how do you do that? You know, and watching a video of Stomvi and what they talk about, you know, you can do it by taking a bunch of lead pipes, a bunch of bells, and you strap them all together, and you test until you get some combination that you like. Okay. Or you figure out mathematically, mouthpiece to lead pipe to tuning slide to to bell combination and all that stuff that's inside that produces that end result. Mm-hmm. And I still believe that, you know, like 90% science on a horn and 10% magic. I think that I really think that you could take a manufacturer and build two horns identically.
Yeah.
You know, back to back. And I think that you'll get different results with each horn if you play them back to back.
Yeah.
There's a certain bit of magic.
Hmm. You know, and it's really hard to explain what you want when you're trying to go get a horn. Like it's actually pretty pretty nerve-wracking. My getting my last horn, you know, I went to BAC Music out in Kansas. I called them up. I just said, "Hey, I just happened to see a post on Instagram. I thought your horn looked pretty. Could you tell me more about it?" And they said, "Well, what are you looking for?" And I said, "Well, I mean, I'm really not sure. I want to be able to play on something a little bit easier. I feel like I'm doing too much." They said, "Oh, okay. Well, hey, do you have a website? Have you put out any music?" He literally did his research and then sent me an email, called me and said, "Okay, based off of what I've heard and what I've seen you perform, I think you should start with this model and then we can go from there." And just the fact that they went above and beyond to do that, I'm like, wow, that's really cool. He could have easily just said, "Okay, well, if you don't know, get this one. This one is pretty much our standard. You start there and we'll be fine." So it's kind of cool that there's horn makers out there that will go above and beyond to really help you figure out where you want to go with your sound. Because a lot of people don't know how, they might know what they want but they don't know how to explain what they want because they don't really know their sound 100% yet or how to explain it.
Well, and that's it. It's knowing your sound 100%, and it's also knowing what your demand is going to be on your face and on your what type of job are you going to be doing. Before I started SeaWorld, you know, I would play probably one or two high double high G's a day, maybe a few a week. When I got the job at SeaWorld, by the time I ended the job at SeaWorld, we had tallied it up, and on a given day, I was playing between 300 and 350 or so double high Gs a day, and, you know, 100 double high A flats and 25 to 50 double high A's a day. Mm-hmm. So at that time, you know, that's when you start seeing the load that you're going to start putting on yourself. That's when you can start. You kind of say, "Well, here's the job I do, and here's what I'm playing, and here's the sound," and then the manufacturers can say, "Oh, well, yeah, we have this horn with this taper and this venturi and this bore size and this bell combination, and you know, try this, and then go from there." Mm-hmm. You know, and then there's the complete custom where you go and you pick out the lead pipe, the chassis, the slide combination, the bells, and you really, the horn is really tailor fitted for you. Yep. Which, you know, it's an interesting concept because I've only ever played someone else's Monette trumpets. I've never played one designed for me. It's kind of like in this day and age, you got whatever flat screen TVs we all have, generic flat screen, and the new flat screen comes out with the high def this and the 8 billion dp, all that stuff, with the
curves and all that
stuff. and they show you and say, "Wow, look at these colors," and you're like, "That's great, but on my screen it looks like my screen." I'm not seeing it unless I go to, the store, Best Buy, and look at the actual screen. When you're seeing it at home, I don't see those nifty colors because my screen doesn't have that. So when you go to buy a Monette trumpet, that's really how you do it. He identifies, he figures you out and then designs the horn really around you. So I've only ever played someone else's horn. So when I play it, it's kind of like ho-hum. But then I realize, well, I'm playing a horn that's designed for somebody else, not really designed for me. What would it be like if I played one that was really designed for me? But unless you're ready to, you know, kick out $8,000-$12,000, yeah, it's not going to happen. So, mm-hmm, you know, it's kind of an interesting phenomenon. But I've played probably half a dozen Monettes in my lifetime, but none of them were what were set for what I would be, yeah, doing. So therefore, I don't think I've really ever gotten to experience the Monette, mm-hmm, experience, you know, that you get to have if you go to his shop and you try this and that and this and that and the other, and you really develop what is going to work for, mm-hmm, for you. And I've never really done, I've never actually got really done a custom horn. Everything I buy has pretty much been off the shelf. Now I have customized horns, and, uh-huh, and, you know, so like I said earlier on, the mouthpiece trouble, well, the Bach was the issue, and it was the receiver going on to the lead pipe, and realizing that that was incorrect, mm-hmm, ended up putting a 43 pipe on my 72 Bach, and that's what I played all through SeaWorld. Well, when I bought this current Bach, it had a 25 pipe on there, and being as I liked the way the 43 felt, I kept that, even though I got rid of the old Bach, kept the lead pipe, mm-hmm, so I put my 43 lead pipe on this current Bach, and that's been my setup now. So it really hasn't changed since 1990. It's been, or 91, I should say. It's been this 72-43 combination. Mm-hmm. Actually wore a little hole in the pipe, so I put a little patch on. Mm-hmm. But that's really the only customizing that I've done, and that's because I want that more open feel.
Yeah.
But I've always got enough lip response from a Bach that I've never really, you know, I've always kind of felt that Bach knew what they were doing when they assembled these horns. I don't, mm-hmm, like to do too much to them. But the pipe was one thing that ended up happening, and it's like, okay, I know that works. I know I like it. I like the feel of it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to keep that happening. So at some point, this pipe is going to completely wear out, and I'll have to buy a new one.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that, you know, a new pipe will have the same feel. But, you know, that's that magic part that I talk about, is that I believe in, is lead pipe to bell combination. You know, there's just certain pipes go with certain bells, and, mm-hmm, and sometimes they work and sometimes they don't. And there's no rhyme or reason to why. But it's just, well, this one works pretty well. We're gonna stick with it. And so,
yeah, you just gotta experience it. You gotta do your research, and you also just gotta go out there and try it. Hey guys, if you want to show support for the show, please visit my Patreon page, where you can become an official patron starting at just $1 a month. There's all sorts of extras you'll get as you climb the tiers, so don't wait any longer. Visit my page at patreon.com/ewillsmusic. That's E-W-I-L-L-Z music. That's what I always find impressive about you. You know what you want in your horn. And once you figured out how it works, it's like, if you ever have a bad day, you say, okay, wait, something's not working. Let me stop. What is this? Oh, okay. I realized because I didn't play for a day or two. I realized that I'm slightly angling my airstream down too far, too up. Let me fix that. And I always thought, man, that's to like really know about yourself that well to that level. I think that's something that a lot of people should strive for, you know, really. Well, because it's crazy out here.
Well, I think one of the best ways to get to that point is you have to have problems. And I've had those problems. That's how you get to that point. You know, I think that if you play a horn and you never had a problem, you really don't, you just keep on going. It's,
yeah.
It works. But, you know, the science part of it, and this is how this all kind of began. A time at Bush, at SeaWorld, I had four horns. And there were two that were really identical. My horn that I bought in Anaheim.
Mm-hmm.
And then I came across somebody who had a similar serial number horn. So mine was 330,000-ish, and this was like 334,000. I mean, they were very, very close in serial number, probably built within the same year. So I managed to purchase this second horn. I said, well, you know, I need a backup, because if this horn, if my horn, A, ever goes bad, I should have a identical horn that I want to play on at the job. So had these horns, and then I bought this other Bach. And in that Bach, in the case, were all these water key pads. Hey, new water key pads. Nice. So I made a habit never to tamper with my original horn. But on this secondary horn, put a new water key pad in, not water key cork. Okay, nice. So I'm playing it, and it's just like you just described. It's like from A on the top of the staff on up, it's thin. Doesn't feel good. It's not talking back to me. I don't have any sense of comfort. What's going on? And fought with it for about a week. So I finally called my teacher up in LA, and I said, hey, got this horn and it's throwing me for a loop. It just doesn't respond. So, you know, I say, come on out, take a lesson and bring all your horns. All right. I bring all these horns and we start with the first one. And he's like, yeah, it is whatever it is. He wasn't, thrilled about it. No big deal. And so here's the secondary horn, you know, this, okay, it's okay. And I said, well, here's my main horn. He's like, yeah, still sounds great. Don't touch it. All right. I said, but here's this mysterious horn. And he plays it. And he looks at the water key and he says, watch this. So he reaches over to this table and grabs a business reply card from a magazine, folds it in quarters and puts it into the water key. And the horn just screams. And I could not believe it. He goes, watch. He pulled that piece of paper out and the horn was just thin sounding again. He put it back in and the horn had this thicker sound, and all it was amounting to was the harmonics were going away. All the harmonics that come out when you play a note and you get all that rich sound. That rich sound is all the harmonics that are attached to that note. And so the science of it is that Bach has figured out that where their water key meets the horn is a nodal point, and it's a node. And so when you change that material, it changes how the frequencies react. Yeah. And after that, it went back out, and I got all regular corks, put back to all my horns, and they were all back to normal. So when horn manufacturers design a trumpet, that's part of that design. John Faddis plays a Schilke horn without any water key because there's no disruption. The waves go right through. That's how it works. Mm-hmm. The Armada water keys were designed so that when you push it, it empties your water, but when it comes back, it erases that bump where the frequencies would go down. But it's still metal, has a different feel than cork. And Bach has always had real cork in that spot. And I couldn't believe it. I sat the rest of my lesson and just laughed because I just was dumbfounded at how such a tiny little thing could make a drastic difference in the response of the horn. And so if you don't have those troubles, it's hard to learn about that. Yeah. And again, you know, I think that for a starting point, if you want to get a custom horn and you're just starting out, I think the first thing you really want to do is find a really good Bach.
Yeah.
Because they're just so they're really straight ahead horns. There's nothing. They're not designed to be specifically for this or that. You can play it in a quintet. You can play it in a big band. You can play it in a symphony or a wind ensemble. You can play it in a church setting. You can play it, in a solo setting. It's a really versatile horn. Mm-hmm. And then from there, you can say, oh, okay, I want to get out of this box. I want to do something different. Then I think through there, you can kind of decide, here's the characteristics I like. Here's the characteristics I don't like. For example, I love the way my box sounds. The characteristic I don't necessarily like, and I learned from my cancel, was I really wish it didn't slot so heavily. I wish it had a little more flexibility in how it slots, a little more ease. And the cancel has that. It really gently puts your lips into the slot of each note. It doesn't really like lock you in and you're set on that slot. And that's mostly when, high C to high G range, you really want a little bit more flexibility up there and not so locked in. Whereas if you have to adjust the pitch way up in that register, the cancel lets you have that little bit of room without sending you off in outer space, where the bond, no, you're playing, it's right here, boom. Yeah. It's right there, but in a recording session when everybody's in tune and everything's right on, and you want that, high F sharp to center right in, that Bach is magic for that, because it just locks you right in, and there's no question that note's going to be there, and you have that freedom. So when you have those problems, that's a time not to give up. That's a time to really dig in and learn about yourself and learn. What don't you like? What's happening right now that you don't like? And to kind of finish up from earlier what we talked about, mouthpieces. Turns out the problem they had with the mouthpiece and the grip was the gold plating. And so that's something I do tell students. I'm going to get this gold mouthpiece. Why? Well, it looks cool. Don't do it because it's pretty. Understand, gold is a different material than silver. And so that was the cause of that trouble, and now I know I don't touch gold mouthpieces. Well, same goes for trumpets. When you have issues, and it's something as minute as a water key cork, or I'm really sensitive to when my horn goes out of alignment. When I was using real Bach pads, they would last at SeaWorld. They would last about, few months, and you start to feel the horn get a little weird. You could feel it not lining up, pitch wise and not centering the way you want it to. Like I said, Bachs are notorious for putting you in that spot, but when they go out of alignment, they're notorious for keeping you from that spot. They want to swim around and you're chasing. And so it was easy in the 90s and the early 2000s to get Bach pads, but since that time, since Bach went on strike, it's been much more difficult to get authentic Bach pads. You can get copies, but the copies will compress and only last about a month, maybe.
Oh, wow.
So what we ended up doing was going to Bob Reeves and getting valve alignments done. Okay. And those last between 10 to 15 years. And making sure that horn is really aligned the way you want it. And I used to be diligent about when I would go to SeaWorld or even at Busch, I'd have at least two sets of valve pads in my case, because I could be in the middle of a day and you can feel it on the face when the horn starts to go. And I would go on a break, put the new pads in, discard the old ones, and be good for the next however long until they start to go again. But it's been difficult to find those authentic parts nowadays.
Well, that is a perfect way to wrap everything up. Just go right back to the mouthpiece. I gotta thank you, man. You're just a bag of useful knowledge that I wish I had in certain parts. Because, you know, something you mentioned earlier about, you know, when you run into these issues, being able to learn from them. And I could say, you know, with myself, I don't have a lot of patience. Or when I was younger, I was really bad with it. So if something went wrong, I'm like, okay, I'm going to step away from this for a couple of days and go back to it later and then see if I can figure it out, you know? But it takes a lot to just, you know, have that maturity to be able to say, okay, well, let me look at this differently. What am I doing? What can I change? How can I change? Should I go to someone and bring it to their attention, you know, a mentor or something like that? And yeah, it's a maturity thing, but it pays off, you know, definitely. And when you come down to, like, you know, custom made, you know, trumpets, we have to be careful with those things. Cause yeah, it's something that could really help a player that wants to be taken seriously or just, you know, take their sound to the next level or be really more in tune with who they're supposed to be as a trumpet player. But to get there, you know, you have to have a level of experience, I believe. I wouldn't want, if I was a band director, I would probably look at a parent funny if it's like, wait, you had a custom made horn for your child? He hasn't even picked out a mouthpiece yet. Well, Larry, man, thank you for coming on the show. Thank you so much. You have a great one, and I hope to have you back very soon.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I really enjoyed it, and I look forward to hopefully coming back soon.
Yeah.
That was the final entry in my three-part summer series featuring the great Larry Hart. If you want to hear the full uncut version of this podcast, make sure you check out the Aftermath episode on my Patreon page that's on right now at E-Wills Music. That's E-W-I-L-L-Z Music. One final big thanks to our guest Larry for making me just a little bit smarter and more relevant. I hope you've learned something and had your third eye open just a little bit. Now, I'll be back with a second season of Trumpet Vibes sooner than you think. So follow me on your favorite social media platforms at E-Wills Music. That's E-W-Y-L-L-Z Music. Also, check out some of the past episodes that I put up. They're pretty good. Thank you for listening. Remember to subscribe. And always, live the music. Chug 'em.